Blog Talk Radio. Listening to the Global Product Management Talk, a regular broadcast for passionate product professionals and business people that don't get a chance to leave their desk and participate in product talks in person, so we bring product talks to you wherever you are. Every episode, we discuss different aspects of what it takes to produce successful products. Everyone is invited, including agile practitioners, user experience designers, content and community managers, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, social media strategists, innovation managers, business analysts, project managers, product managers, program managers, product marketing managers, brand managers, software developers, and you, as well as everyone involved with the entire product lifecycle process from inception to sunsetting. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That's our website, www.PRODMGMTTALK.com. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK and use the hashtag to tweet answers to the questions and follow the tweets, # PRODMGMTTALK. Thank you to our broadcast sponsor, Atlassian. Software is transforming the world. Atlassian is helping transform the teams building it. Atlassian helps innovators everywhere plan, build, and launch great software. Find out why more than 21,000 companies of all sizes use Atlassian issue tracking, collaboration, and software development products to work faster and smarter together. Visit Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Join us in person for lively discussions and great networking with product professionals at Startup Product Talks San Francisco Monthly. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more. Discover how to work together to develop amazing products. Startup Product Summit, February 7th, 2013. Startupproduct.com. Thank you to our platinum sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Visit them on the web, www.aipmm.com. The AIPMM is a worldwide certifying body of product marketing, management, and team professionals. The AIPMM promotes worldwide excellence and forwards product management professionalism with certification credentials, education, trainings, networking, and professional growth opportunities. AIPMM membership benefits include eligibility for certification, partner offerings and training discounts, productivity tools, career center, mentor matching, advanced access to new curriculums, webinar series, thought leaders, and private events. AIPMM certification credentials allow individual members to demonstrate their level of expertise and provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Subscribe to the AIPMM Product Management News and Views newsletter, www.aipmm.com/subscribe. Follow at AIPMM on Twitter. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon and on the web, cindyfsolomon.com. Hello, and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk on this crisp Monday morning in December. This is Cindy Solomon. Thanks for being with us today. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Jerry Rackley, who's the Vice President at Demand Metric. He's Vice President of Marketing and Product Development, and we're talking about proper product positioning. There's tremendous and growing competition for the attention span of people in your target market. When you consider how many promotional messages the average person is subjected to in a day, and the amount that I just threw at you, the fact that any of yours get through may seem nothing short of miraculous. All marketers strive to rise above their market's noise level and be heard. What is the best way to do this? The answer begins with positioning, the creation of a unique market position your customers will recognize and value. Firms that position their companies and products effectively have an advantage when it comes to being seen and heard. A little bit about Jerry. Jerry Rackley joined Demandmetric in October 2011 as Vice President of Marketing and Product Development. He began his 28-year marketing career at IBM, and his work record includes experience in the technology and financial services sectors. During his career, he has worked with companies ranging in size from startups to members of the Global 1000, performing marketing, marketing communication, public relations, and product management work. He's a graduate of Oklahoma State University and an adjunct marketing faculty member in the Speer School of Business. Let me tell you also a little bit about Demandmetric, because I'm very excited about the tools and the methodologies, the templates that they provide that I have been using. So go to demandmetric.com. It's a specialized community built around the needs of marketing professionals and consultants. They research best practices and provide premium tools and templates, consulting methodologies and guides. They've been in business since 2006. They work with small startups and consulting firms. And let me tell you, they give away a lot of excellent information. If you're a new product manager, if you're a project manager, if you're charged with getting products out the door, check out demandmetric.com. And honestly, I didn't mean that to be a plug. It's just I'm excited and delighted to use the tool. So, Jerry, is there anything that I've left out in introducing you?
Cindy, no, that was a very comprehensive introduction. Thank you so much.
So thanks for being with us today, and I've had the pleasure of doing a webinar with you previously and collaborating a bit. So positioning, I know that you've written a bunch about positioning, and it's something that you're very passionate about. So tell us, what is so important about positioning? It's almost something that's invisible. It's not, you can't see it. Sometimes it's not even obvious to know how a product is positioned.
Well, you're right. You know, it's funny. You say it's invisible. It's certainly behind the scenes, but it's real important. It's a little bit like the wind. You can't see it, but you can sure feel the effects of it. And I think maybe the best way for me to describe positioning and how I got to be so passionate about it is to share a story from my background. I worked at a small software company from 1993 to 2000, and that was a time when the commercial internet was just really bursting onto the scene. And we had a very innovative CEO that developed a solution that enabled a web browser to access legacy mainframe applications. These are legacy IBM mainframe applications. When we rolled it out, nobody had anything like it, and it was truly a first, and we were very excited about its prospects. So we thought, all right, you know, we have a lot of opportunity here. We need to take this solution we've developed on the road, show it to some companies, because we're pretty sure that there's companies out there that are going to throw a lot of cash at us, either to license or buy this solution from us. After all, there were at the time, and still are, billions of dollars of legacy IBM applications that were running. So this will take you back a ways, but one of our first stops was Netscape. Yeah, got to remember, this was in, you know, the late 90s. And Netscape at the time was at the top of the internet leadership pyramid. And we ran through our presentation. We logged in using one of their browsers and were manipulating a mainframe application. And we had these two Netscape representatives in the room with us, and they listened politely. And at the end of our pitch, they said, okay, to us, Microsoft Word and Excel are legacy applications. They had absolutely no frame of mind or reference for what an IBM legacy application was. And after a few more receptions of a similar nature to our pitch, we were kind of scratching our heads. And so we called in an outside expert, and he assessed our situation and our pitch, and basically said, "No, your problem is that you know too much. You haven't positioned your product for the people who can benefit most from it." And so that was really where kind of the light bulb went on in my mind about how important positioning is. And so from that point on, it's become kind of the stock and trade for everything I do.
Mark Andreessen went, I was telling someone recently that Mark Andreessen, the head of Netscape, was pretty much the Mark Zuckerberg of the time. And he's gone on to bigger and better things and investing in startups here in the Valley. So it sounds to me like you were presenting this product that you thought was all that to a company that didn't appreciate it. So was it a matter of you weren't speaking their language or you didn't understand what their needs were?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's essentially it. The problem that we had is that it was our baby. This product was one that we developed and we had invested a lot in. Nobody knew more about this product than we did. And so when you live and breathe, you know, the fumes of a development effort like that, and you just can't step outside of it, it starts to affect the way you think the market should perceive your product. It's just almost impossible to have what I call an out-of-body experience and view your innovation, to view your product, the way the market's going to view it. And so that's why sometimes it is helpful to have someone from the outside come and help you with positioning. But had we done that, and by the way, we were pretty quick, steady. Once we figured out what we were doing wrong in terms of positioning, we went and cleaned it up and then had a lot of success with the product. And in the end, it actually led to our company being acquired by a bigger company. But we had to learn the lesson the hard way about positioning, and that was we have to clearly articulate what it is and who it's for and why it's better than something else that's out there as an alternative. And so that was the lesson that we learned.
And so articulating what the value of the product is, how is that done? Is that done purely through sales tools, because the example you gave us was a sales call?
You know, I think there's a lot of inputs to the process when you do positioning well. My advice whenever I'm helping someone with doing positioning is that you have to begin with understanding that, let's talk some terminology. Let me back up here. Positioning is the act of defining the place in the market that's ideal for yourself. And so that's the process, is positioning. A positioning statement is a very specific set of words that you intentionally craft that very precisely and concisely, and those are not at odds with each other, at least they shouldn't be, describes your market position. And so to develop your position and then, of course, document it in a statement, you're going to get inputs from lots of places. But in the end, what you're after is not a position and a supporting statement that is filled with marketing hyperbole. So even though marketers and product managers are often the ones in the conference room developing this statement, you sort of have to resist, if you're marketing-oriented, you have to resist your instinct to, you know, start throwing qualifiers in, like our product is a world class or best of breed. You know, that's ad copy, or that's something that goes on your website. But in positioning, this is a much more objective exercise. This is an internal exercise. And so you have to come up with a market position that works well for the product, that creates success for the product. But then the statement is sort of like the cornerstone piece of copy that's going to drive all the marketing communications that's going to occur for a product or solution. And so it needs to not be filled with marketing hyperbole. It needs to pass the BS test. Does that make sense?
It sure does. So I'm trying to understand. So then this positioning statement, is this an internal, almost a mission for where, how to place the market, how to place the product in the market?
It is an internal statement. I talk about positioning a lot. You mentioned I'm an adjunct faculty member, and I teach about this in my business marketing class. And it's not ad copy. It's, in fact, a positioning statement is something that a customer or a user may never see.
Ah, okay. That's key.
It is key. They may never see it. So it is internal, but it influences everything. So let me kind of talk about how this works in terms of a hierarchy. You have positioning defined for a product. And by the way, you can position companies as well, but you kind of see differences in the way you do that. But look, for today's discussion, I think let's focus primarily on product position. And you define the position of a product in the market and describe it through a statement. And once you have that statement, it can really become the catalyst for lots of things. So, for example, ideally, you do all this positioning work well before a product is launched into the market. Can you launch a product without having defined its position and supporting it with a position statement? Sure you can, but it's not a best practice. So you define it very, very early. Once you start to know what a product's going to look like, it's starting to emerge from the lab or from the development area, you define positioning for it. You refine it as you begin to know more. So, for example, if you are doing beta testing in a solution, you're going to get some experience data out of the beta testing. That may cause you to refine your position, because the positioning is really designed to help you convey value. And certainly the positioning statement also describes how a product creates value for its ideal set of users or customers. So when you have all that, at some point in this whole process of delivering a new product to the market, you're going to need to support it with marketing communications, material, brochures, web copy, maybe some advertisements. One of the best things you can do if you have an in-house graphics design team, for example, you need that brochure, is you take the positioning information over to the graphics design folks and say, hey, this is what we need support for. We need a brochure for this product. Here's the positioning statement. Now, to be honest or fair, is that enough for a good graphics designer to create a full brochure? Well, probably not, but I will tell you this. It will get them started in the right direction. Help them go a long way. They'll want to know more, for sure. But if you provide that kind of information to the people in the organization who are doing the communicating, it's going to help make sure that they communicate well, that their messages are consistent with the positioning. And it'll just, enhance the way that product is perceived in the market, all because of positioning. And so that's why positioning has to come first. It's that foundational.
So, Jerry, let me ask you. So positioning needs to come first. Could you say that the positioning provides the context for the product in the market, number one? And number two, are you positioning against something else? Are you positioning against a competitive product, against a industry space? So I'm throwing two questions at you.
Sure, yeah. I would say you're almost always positioning against a competitive product. If you're not positioning against a competitive product, you're positioning against a substitute or alternative approach. So even though you have something that's very, very innovative, there's nothing else out there like it, there's probably some sort of approach or process it's intended to improve on or replace. So the short answer is yes. You always factor in the competition, because part of what you do in the process of positioning is you do a comparison. What is this thing that we have, this new product, what's it better than? And what are the benefits it delivers? And so positioning really forces you to look at both what's the benefit, what is this better than, but then also why. And that's where a lot of organizations have difficulty positioning, is coming up with the real firm evidence as to why our solution is better. We like to think it's better because we created it, right? That's the pride of authorship in us that wants to say, well, of course it's better. We made it. It's a lot better. But again, you have to have, even though positioning is an internal process and a positioning statement is an internal statement, you have to develop it with an external point of view. What would the market think? Does the market think it's better? Will they get the benefits that you say they're going to get from using this product? And so positioning sometimes should influence the rollout of a new product. If you go through a positioning exercise and you ask, you know, the really tough questions and you're not getting good answers back as to why our solution's better and what the benefits are, if it's pretty fuzzy, then my advice sometimes might be maybe you ought to just stop and see if you in fact have a differentiation built into this solution you're about to launch that you think you do. Because if you don't, then it's going to have a real rough go in the marketplace. So to really have great positioning, you have to have great differentiation. And the act of trying to develop positioning and understand what your position should be forces you to look at whether or not you have it. And if you don't have it, I would say maybe you ought to go figure out how to get it before you really try to take the plunge in the marketplace with a product.
And so going back to the previous question, would it be accurate to think that the positioning statement provides the context for the product in the market and in the space where you want that product to live?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Positioning does provide context.
Okay. So to go for the obvious, in terms of commercials, we see advertising positioning products for us, you know, the most famous probably being the I'm a PC commercials for Microsoft. Is it a couple of years ago already?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, that's
where.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. As a matter of fact, though, those were commercials for Apple, positioning Apple as a easy to use consumer product, as opposed to PCs, which were not easy to use and were business products.
That's right. And you see a lot of advertising that reflects positioning as it should. And that's a great example. And we could go sort of deconstruct that ad series and ask ourselves what, you know, element of their product positioning were they really trying to reinforce. I'll give you another example. It's actually one of my favorite examples because I think it helps illustrate positioning so well. And it comes from Harley Davidson. And so if I were to ask you, Cindy, and anyone else who cares to respond, what does Harley Davidson sell?
They sell very noisy hogs, I think they call them. Things that that tough guys ride.
That's right. It's a motorcycle, but that, technically speaking, you are correct. That's what they sell. But you have even touched on their positioning in your answer. And a Harley Davidson executive said it this way, and I wish I knew which executive it was, but when asked what Harley Davidson sells, this is what a Harley executive said. What we sell is the ability for a 43-year-old accountant to dress in black leather, ride through small towns, and have people be afraid of him. Okay, now that's a different, isn't it? But you look at that answer and you realize...
I'm sorry, I'm looking out at my sound engineer who's really enjoying that.
Well, and it's the truth. It's funny for sure, but it reflects what Harley actually sells. Yes, they have a product. It's a tangible product. It's a motorcycle, and you're right, it's noisy. But for a reason, right? If you were to go to Harley and say, hey, we'd really like it if you put a good muffler on those bikes because, you know, I hate when the neighbor leaves the neighborhood at 5 a.m. on the way to the early shift and wakes everybody in the neighborhood up and the dogs are all barking. Could you change that, please? And Harley would say, absolutely not, because that's who we are. That's the value. Our value proposition has to do with this perception. And so Harley has absolutely figured that out. and they've set themselves apart. There's a lot of motorcycles out there, a lot of companies that make a lot of great bikes. But if I were to ask you, which manufacturer sells motorcycles that whose riders convey sort of a tough guy attitude, I bet almost everyone would answer, oh, that's Harley Davidson.
Yes.
And so there's a company that understands their positioning, has figured it out, and they have all these positioning icons that are part of their company, and they're loyalists, and it's, you know, it's the black leather, and it's, you know, you can picture the same thing I can.
Oh, totally. I could probably see one riding by in a very short time. So please clarify for me, Jerry, what you're describing, I kind of think of as branding. Well, you describe the brand of Harley Davidson from almost the user experience, from the customer's experience of it, and the reason why the customer would choose it. And not only that, you kind of described a persona of who is their target audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to say that positioning and branding had nothing to do with each other would be completely false. The positioning, as I try to articulate, probably not very succinctly, but it should infiltrate everything you do with a product and brand. And so that's why, if you want to take the textbook approach, the place to start is with positioning. And from positioning, it extends out into all these areas. It's influences what you say. It should influence the way you brand something, what you say about the brand, and the brand promises that are implied. And, you know, so all of those things should all be wrapped up around position. But with all that said, while I wholeheartedly, firmly believe that, is that the way it happens? I would say often no. I cannot tell you at some point in history, you know, years or decades ago, the good folks at Harley-Davidson sat down in a conference room and said, okay, let's position our product. And they came up with this positioning and then created the brand. And then, no, they probably didn't. Probably didn't work that way. It's probably evolved that way. But I would also wager that the folks who are managing the products for that company and the communication and the brand and the marketing have figured all that out clearly and are now using it to their advantage in terms of how they present product to the market and promote it and sell it. So,
definitely. And, you know, I remember reading a study about the history of Harley Davidson where at one point they had taken the sound away because the noise was an indication that something wasn't working right. And their sales went down when they were quieter. So they realized that the noise was key to their positioning, and they put it back in.
And sometimes that's exactly how companies begin to discover what their true positioning is when they make changes and they have unanticipated consequences of those changes. And so, you know, if you're smart, then you figure out, okay, that's apparently more important than you realized it was.
Okay. So let me check and see if we are answering the questions. And I think you alluded to this, but our Q1 question had been, when in the product life cycle should you determine its market positioning? And so you're answering it, it's... From my understanding of what you said, Jerry, you should determine product positioning from the get-go, from the very beginning. I would suggest it should be included in the marketing requirements document and drive the marketing requirements document. Is that correct?
I agree, yeah. It needs to happen pretty early, and it certainly needs to happen before a product gets launched because the positioning of a product should have a lot to do with the way you build a launch plan.
For sure. Now, so what happens when the product is launched? Is it too late to develop a positioning statement?
No, it's not too late. There's a couple of scenarios there. One is that you position a product and launch it, and then you discover maybe the launch is, you're not generating the results you expected. And so I think you go back and take a look at, all right, why, and you do some problem determination, and you may find that the product's not positioned correctly. It needs to be positioned differently. And in other cases, you'll find a product that gets launched and or maybe escaped is the better word, because it didn't really have the plan associated with it. And it's out there, and it's, you know, having some degree of success, who knows, and you realize then, well, what must we do to achieve the goals? And in that kind of introspection, often the path leads to positioning, because you start asking questions. Well, is it in the right market? Are people getting the benefits that we thought they would? Is it, you know, performing? You know, all those types of things that really position would have forced you through some degree of consideration before you launched it in the first place. And so sometimes you have a do-over after you position the product that's already been launched. But regardless, I think that what companies that are smart about managing products do is they're always watching, monitoring, or auditing the positioning. It's not something that you set in stone and you write a launch plan and put the product out in the market and you know, watch it have success and grow and say, well, I'm glad we got that one right. Let's move on to the next one. Now, I think you have to look at positioning on a regular basis. And certainly anytime you're getting ready to launch a new version, like if you, put version one out in the market and now you're getting ready to do version two, you want to look at positioning again. Every time you go back to the market with something new for that product, it's always a time to go and validate the positioning. Because often, as you see a product evolve, the scope of what it does, the set of needs that it addresses, the ideal set of customers for a product tends to expand. That's just sort of the nature of product evolution. And so as that happens, I think you refine your positioning to make sure that you're capturing all of those pieces, all those components, and future and new versions of a product.
So it's interesting. You touched upon a point regarding how the product is doing in the marketplace. And your suggestion is that you should always be monitoring how the product is doing from a positioning point of view, if you need to readjust its positioning. And I was thinking that, you know, it depends on who you talk to in the organization and how they're viewing how that product is doing out there. If you talk to a developer who's looking at, and you're giving them data, feedback from the market that the product isn't doing well, you know, a developer's instinct would be to decide the product isn't doing well because it doesn't have the right features. So, you know, but of course, if you talk to a product marketing person, they would recognize, well, the product might not be doing well because it's not positioned correctly. The messaging, the narrative, the description of the product isn't hitting, the target audience correctly. So how do you bring this message internally that it's not a feature problem, it's the target audience problem, it's a positioning which embraces the whole description of the product in the market?
Well, you're actually, I think, touching on one of the reasons why positioning is so important, and that's because as you go through the process of positioning a product, you are supposed to give very thorough consideration to the target market for any solution. And in the course of doing that, one of the things you attempt to understand is what the needs are and how this product you're positioning is going to address those needs. And so if you do positioning well, you catch that early and you have the opportunity to fix it. Now, all of that does not factor in to this whole process, something that can cause positioning or lots of things to fail, and that is culture. or company politics. And so it's very possible you could have, you know, some very capable product management going on that's driving the positioning process and is discovering, you know what, I think we have a mismatch. I think we have a product. We're trying to, you know, cram a square peg into a round hole in terms of its market, and we don't have all the features, or we don't have the pricing, or whatever it is, and that gets identified. And sometimes there are companies that say, you know, fine, we're just going to throw it out there anyway, and we'll fix it later. And that's pretty iffy. You can get some interesting results. What I think happens more often is companies start really well, and then over time, they they're moored at the beginning of a product's life cycle to a really great position for the product. But over time, it's like the product slips its positioning moorings and starts to drift away, attaches it immediately. And I'll tell you an example of that, and it's a kind of an old school example, but one I think everyone will appreciate. And I'm going to use General Motors to talk about what happens when you don't position, when you don't maintain your positioning and keep tuning. And go back with me to the 1930s when General Motors had a very specific positioning strategy. It was this: a car for every pocketbook. And the entry-level product line was a Chevy. It was low-priced entry-level. The next one up was a Pontiac, which is a little bit higher performance. The next one up was Oldsmobile, a little bit more prestige. The next one up was the Buick, but a bit more performance and luxury. And at the top of the product pyramid was the Cadillac, the ultra-premium brand. And in the 1930s, you would buy a new Chevrolet or you would buy a new Cadillac. A new Cadillac cost 1,200% of the price of a Chevrolet in the 1930s. So these brands were all positioned and aligned with income realities. Over time, as we go from decade to decade, let me tell you what happened. The price of a Cadillac in the 1940s was 500% the cost of a Chevy, the entry-level model. In the 1950s, a Cadillac was 120% the cost of a Chevy. And by 1960s, you could actually get a Cadillac, depending on the configuration, for 90% the cost of a fully loaded, completely tricked out Chevy. And so you start to see where this progression is going, even though you don't have the numbers in front of me. What happened to General Motors is they had great positioning in the 30s, but then they forgot about it. And all they did is they just kept building cars and throwing features in. And some people on this call may remember this. If you go back to the 80s, and you can imagine General Motors in the 80s, and I can remember this because my parents had one of these cars, a 1980 Chevy Impala, a 1980 Buick LeSabre, a 1980 Pontiac Bonneville, and a 1980 Oldsmobile 88. And you can go Google images, Google these, and look at the pictures. You can hardly tell the cars apart. The only differences were the grills, the badge, and some finish and trim on the inside and outside, but they were fundamentally the same cars. And so you ask, okay, well, what were the implications of that? Well, people couldn't see any difference in the positioning and the branding, the value. It purely became a preference. And if you keep going forward in time, look at what happened to the stable of GM brands. How many of those brands don't exist anymore? And if you can't remember, Pontiac is gone and Oldsmobile is gone. And a lot of people say, well, sure, Jerry, they're gone, but that had more to do with just, you know, achieving economies of scale and cutting costs. And at the time the decisions were made, I'm sure that's right, but I can also say this. If General Motors had managed to maintain effective positioning that differentiated each of these brands and positioned them specifically to a certain kind of customer, the need to get rid of those brands probably would never have come up. And so that's just one kind of large example that I think everyone can relate to about why it's important to pay attention to your positioning. So hopefully that kind of puts it into context. Sorry, it's a bit of a long story, but I hope you found it helpful.
Totally, and I appreciate it because our audience really encompasses people, product professionals and managers and business owners and people in consumer as well as B2B. So thank you. I tend to focus on software because that's my orientation. But so that was an excellent example. Thanks, Jerry. So it's interesting. The point you make of the interpretations they made about why those brands disappeared were from a financial perspective. And you're making a point that it was because of the narrative around those brands, that they didn't stay focused on who the audience, who the consumers were for those brands. They didn't nurture that audience, or they didn't speak to them appropriately to maintain those brands. So that's very interesting, because I see that often, that who will drive what should be owned by a marketing perspective will be the bottom line financials. Although in tech companies, it will always be the tech perspective on the features of the product as opposed to the marketing. And I think it has to do with what I opened with, that it appears to be that positioning is invisible, although you made it very concrete with the GM example.
Well, sure. And I think what we understand about positioning is it's not in any way, shape, or form intended to be a drag on the bottom line. It's quite the opposite, in fact. And positioning, when understood properly, is more of a rifle shot or laser beam directed right at the group of customers or users who are best suited to use a product and get benefits from it. And so that's in direct contrast to what we see a lot of companies do, which I call the shotgun approach, is where you have a product, you know it has some features, it's going to have appeal to somebody, you're not sure who, so you just kind of, in terms of your messaging and your promotion, if you want to just call it advertising, we can call it that too, you just shotgun your messages out there and say, let's just throw a bunch of messages out there and hope that some of them land on the people who would become interested in our product, give us purchase consideration, hopefully buy it. And so that sounds like a good approach a lot of times, but it's actually a very inefficient approach and potentially a much more costly approach. You're just better off in the end to figure out who from the very start is going to be the ideal user for this product, and how can we communicate with them and communicate very deliberately, not just what we are and what we do, but what they're going to get from our product. And if you do that well, then you're going to be able to go and really dominate a segment. And it all really kind of comes out of the way you position a product. And so there's a temptation you kind of have to resist here. And it's hard for marketers and for salespeople to resist the temptation, but that is, let's position this for everybody. Sure, why not? position it for everybody. Well, the reality is, because everybody's probably not going to buy a product. It's not designed for everybody. It's designed for a specific kind of user, a specific sort of company doing a certain kind of thing. And so if you can do that really well, it becomes much easier to really kind of dominate that segment you define through your marketing. It all goes back to having great positioning, because if you have positioning, it's one thing to have it, but if you execute on it, because that's what you really have to do, you have to buy into it. And so there is this kind of emotional component to this whole discussion that says, you know, we're going to go create this positioning that we feel like gives this product the best chance to succeed in the marketplace. But the next issue is this: can we get the buy-in inside the company for everyone to do this? Because when you create solid positioning that you really believe will work, it directs you to a certain market or certain segment or certain set of customers. But by implication, what it also does is it directs you away from others, right? Because what you're saying is, we're going to optimize our approach. We're going to optimize our communication, our advertising, the way we're going to structure the brand and present the brand, totally optimized for our positioning. which means it might not have much appeal to people who you're not positioning for, which is okay, really, it is. But what happens when you get the VP of sales who walks into the discussion and says, wait a minute, you mean we shouldn't try to sell this product over here to this different kind of customer that you're not positioning the product for? Well, it means we're not going after them. Does it mean we wouldn't sell it to them? No, not necessarily. We probably would, but it means you're not going to see anything coming out of the organization specifically designed to persuade someone who does not fall into our positioning definition to buy this product. So that you're really making a choice when you are doing positioning. And that's why the buy-in becomes so important. And that's therefore helpful to get lots of people involved in creating the positioning so they understand exactly why it looks the way it looks. Why did you choose to position it this way in the market? Why did you craft this specific statement and say these are the benefits and this is the kind of customer that's going to get them? It sounds kind of exclusionary. And so when you do it, you really have to make sure you've got the right people on board so that you don't have some kind of fight on your hands afterward and saying, no, it's too narrow.
Hey, speaking of having the right people on board, I want to shout out to the listeners and invite you to call in to join us. If you'd like to call in and speak with Jerry and I, please call 323-927-2957. So there's a lot of buy-in out here on Twitter. I want to do a shout out to Ben Shan, Barbara Norris, Janelle Rainey, Louis Calderon. Thanks for listening in. And let's see, Ben Shan says, lesson on losing positioning. So he's echoing what you were saying about GM's brands and that there was a subtle distinction at best. A lot of people are appreciating the refresh on product positioning. So you know that these are people who appreciate marketing or product marketers. They understand, certainly in doing product marketing in tech-driven companies, we're always up against optimizing features for the right market. So thanks for that. I'm just checking the tweets. You've been covering some really great information. So why don't we go back to just a basic about how do you construct a positioning statement? Is there a specific nuts and bolts to that? Or is that something that requires an MBA or an intense course to really get down well?
Yeah, there is sort of a template that you can follow. In fact, Demand Metric has a positioning statement worksheet on its website. So if someone's looking for a resource, there's one there. And it's positioning is one of those things, it's simple but not easy, if that makes sense. I don't mean to be counterintuitive, but it's simple in terms of the template. It's quite simply, you begin with, you can follow the template. You could say for and then describe who the product is for, the target market or customer set for the product. But remember, what you're doing is you're describing it very precisely. And then you describe the product is, and then you create a description of the product. And once again, you think, well, that sounds simple. Well, it sounds simple, but remember what your goal is. You have to be objective, and you have to be precise, and you have to be concise. And so when you start looking at it in those terms, it starts to get a little bit harder. And then you describe the product is better than, and what is the competing alternative or approach that you feel you most need to position a product against. And then the last part of a positioning statement typically is because, and that's where you provide evidence, the reasons why you're saying it's better than something else. It's okay to say that, but then we're asking you in the positioning statement to provide evidence because. And that's usually the hardest part of the whole positioning thing. But there's some strategies that can help when it comes to positioning a product. And one strategy is there's just a whole lot of value to saying in your positioning that you were the first to do something significant. Being first has lots of value. You know, in Western culture, you know, we put such a premium on competition and coming in first, and we watch the Olympics and love to see who wins the gold medal. And so being first matters, and I'll give you a quick example of the power of being first. So if I were to ask everyone listening in, who were Ernst Schmid and Jörg Marmet? I know those are tough names. But let me repeat them. Who were these two guys? Ernst Schmid and Jörg Marmet. Okay, and I'm not going to wait for the answer. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. They actually were the second group of people to ever summit Mount Everest. The second group. And nobody, except probably their immediate friends and family who are still alive, knows that. But if I were to have asked, who is Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay? Now, not everyone might know who they are, but I bet a fair number of people go, oh, those are the first two guys to climb Mount Everest. And the answer is yes, of course, because we recognize achievement when someone gets to be first at something. So you think, well, that's great, Jerry. I love the strategy, but I wasn't the first, you know, XYZ product to launch in our marketplace. Someone beat us to it, so we can't use that strategy. Well, actually, you can. You just have to be kind of creative about how you do it. One of the software companies I worked for in the 90s, we had a software solution. It was a fax server. I know nobody sends faxes anymore, but we had a fax server. It was a PC with our software we developed in it and a set of fax boards that we bought from a partner. Well, this particular partner, they were really good at marketing and positioning, and they understood this value of being first. And they developed a new fax board, and they set it up in the lab. And the product manager directed the engineers, look, I want you to set up a fax simulator. I want you to run faxes through this thing and count them. Every time you send a fax through it, just a dummy fax, they didn't even care what the fax content was. They just wanted to have a fax complete through this board. And I want you to run it night and day and count it until we get to 1 million faxes. And so they did, and I don't know how long it took. It probably took, you know, a couple days to get all that done. But when they did, the company issued a press release and said, you know, we launched this fax board and it's already achieved 1 million faxes. We've already run 1 million faxes through it. The first board of this type to have 1 million faxes go through it. And so you look at that and you think, okay, well, you kind of contrived that, but yet at the same time, that's pretty doggone clever. And again, when you can claim the position of being first at something, you just get more attention. More people watch you, pay attention to you, and create a bigger impression. And so that's a great positioning strategy. And the challenge is for the marketing manager and product managers to work together and figure out, okay, what can we be first at? And so that's lots of value. But, of course, there's other positionings too. And those positioning strategies are to find, you know, a place where no one else is occupying in terms of a niche and a position for it, right? So you think about vitamins. If I were to ask you about multivitamins, Cindy, and I would say, name a brand of multivitamins, you might have to think for a minute. But if I were to ask you, okay, give me a brand of multivitamin that's specifically for older people, what would you say?
Centrum.
Centrum. You know, they've positioned themselves Centrum Silver. You know, that's their brand. Or if I were to say, okay, not that I advocate the habit, but if I were to ask you, name a brand of cigarettes specifically for women.
Virginia Slims.
Oh, that's it. Or if I were to ask...
that's not even something I pay attention to at all. Gee.
And nor I, they didn't get that because they've succeeded in positioning themselves in that particular niche, and they've had success there. And I'll just throw one more, just to kind of show you how the niche positioning idea works. You know, we're walking down the cold remedy aisle at the store, and it's filled with lots of brands. But I would say, hey, Cindy, can you pick out a cold remedy specifically to be taken at night?
NyQuil.
Exactly.
And I think so I'm not susceptible to advertising.
Well, it's and that advertising, by the way, is a reflection of their positioning. And by the way, it works so well that that same company said, well, you know, we're going to come out with a daytime remedy, and guess what it's called? DayQuil.
So right.
You're seeing where these companies are figuring out how to be first and how to go find a niche that they can stand out in above all the noise in the market from competing solutions. And so those are just a few examples about how you can do that.
Got it. Great. Well, you know, we're coming up to the end of the hour, and I think it always goes really fast. Jerry, I've been tweeting out that people should definitely check out, they're actually AIPMM ProdBoc productivity tools for specifically developed for the product managers and product marketers in the audience. But and demandmetric.com has a whole bunch of not only tools, but webinars and templates and all kinds of things that will put you forward in being effective in positioning your products and marketing, advertising, as well as managing the features and the products across the entire life cycle. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jerry. Any last words? Not last words, but any comment to summarize our conversation?
You know, I would just encourage everyone, it's worth the time and effort to do positioning well. And I have, from my own experience, spent, I can think of half days to a full day in a conference room around a whiteboard arguing over the placement of words in a positioning statement. But it's okay for the collaboration to be that way, because the benefits you get out of having strong positioning are just so great, it's worth the time and effort to do it.
Great. And Janelle Rainey said, find white space to position above the noise of the market. Great point.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today on the Global Product Management Talk. Please follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK to get reminders of upcoming talks, as well as to view the archive of discussions, which are also available on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on our Prod Management Talk Android app in the Google Play Marketplace. Join us next week for yet another great discussion before the year end. Follow us on Twitter at Prod Management Talk. Thanks to our listeners and our tweeters today. And follow at Prod Management Talk for incentives and rewards for listening. And thank you to our sponsors, the AIPMM and Atlassian. We are getting over 12,000 listens per week. So position your product with the Global Product Management Talk and sponsor us. Thanks again, Jerry, and have a great week.
Thank you, Cindy, and have a great week, everyone.
Join us in person for lively discussions and great networking with product professionals at Startup Product Talks San Francisco monthly. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more. Discover how to work together to develop amazing products. Startup Product Summit, February 7th, 2013. Startupproduct.com. Our intro theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com and the great Mark Blasco. We are broadcasting live from Studio 132.com.